This is the world of Salesforce and Dropbox, HubSpot and Evernote, a world unthinkable without cloud software services. Most businesses and consumers use SaaS every day to get work done. Driven by the internet and ever-expanding availability of bandwidth, SaaS has come to dominate our lives in a very short span of time. But developing a defining service, often ahead of its time, getting users to engage, secure funding, protect IP, and building a truly remarkable and successful SaaS is not an easy task. SaaS Stories brings conversations with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead. How they built their SaaS, genesis, struggles, trials, tribulations, and eventually success. Welcome to SaaS Stories. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to this episode of SaaS Stories. Continuing our focus on Canada, today we have with us Nick Hollinger, the CEO and co-founder of VisitorQ.
So there's a few ways that companies action on the data. There is a bucket that's just like, I want to know the companies visiting my website. I might not take action every day or might not take action every at all, really. They like to see who's on the website. The same reason you look at Google Analytics, right? You might not have too much action there. You might see your visitors are 1,000 one day and 1,200 the next, and you're like, okay, that's great. I'd like to see that. And then the kind of the other bucket is on the marketing side, where if you're like, I pushed out this blog content, I want to ensure that we're driving companies to it, that it's companies that are going here, or how is AdWords doing? Is it driving actual companies to our website? So it's more on the marketing analytics side. And then the third bucket, which is probably our biggest use case, is with sales teams. And that's really the key to VisitorQ. If you want to get an actual dollar value return out of it, a hard dollar in, a hard dollar out, is using it from a sales team perspective. But there's a number of different use cases with the data.
Nick is the CEO and co-founder of VisitorQ, currently working with over 5,000 companies to help them identify the anonymous organizations that are visiting their website. In his spare time, he's also the game day director for one of Canada's most successful junior hockey teams, the London Knights, and a Big Brothers volunteer. Previously, he held head of marketing and sales roles at SMB B2B organizations. Nick strongly believes that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. He enjoys sharing his knowledge, experience, and opinion on marketing, sales, SaaS, and entrepreneurship. Now, on to this gritty episode of SaaS Stories with Nick Hollinger. Nick, welcome to SaaS Stories. I'm delighted to have you on the show. The space you are in is very interesting, and it looks that a lot of change in sales technology that's happening has the roots in the IP address and this space, basically. So let's start at the beginning. How did you start, and how did you get to the point of starting a VisitorQ?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, by the way. It really got started after I graduated college. I went and worked at a digital marketing agency here in London, Ontario, Canada, about 2 hours west of Toronto, if you're trying to put it on a map. But I was working at the digital agency for a little bit there, and then ended up moving on to a B2B health and safety training company here in London as well. And while there, I was the marketing manager and eventually got put into a sales manager type role as well. And I was trying to bridge the gap of helping the sales team convert more leads, getting them more leads, and really the whole funnel process. So I was in charge of everything. And one technology that really stood out to me and one possibility was around IP addresses and reversing them to enable the sales team to follow up with leads that didn't convert. And I saw a lot of growth in this space and a lot of growth potential in this space. A lot of B2B companies haven't even heard of this type of technology. And data and sales enablement are two categories that are definitely going to be massive over the next decade. So it intrigued me. I looked at a few tools that were on the market, didn't really find anything that fit our needs at the company I was working at, and a few more gaps, and obviously the potential to really grow in this space was interesting. So I decided to reach out to some dev shops in London here that I either had a connection with or knew, and got some quotes on what it would cost to build. And I ended up talking to an individual by the name of Taraz Zubiak, who runs Code Elves here in London. And he gave me a quote for what it would cost to actually build the solution. And I said, okay, what if we just did an equity deal instead and you joined as CTO and built it out and joined me on this journey rather than being my dev shop? And he agreed. And that's about June of 2017 when we actually started building the solution.
At this point, no investment. It's your money and his time.
Correct. Yeah, for a long time, that's how it was. For a long time. And it really started with some cash I had built up and had left over from some previous investments and previous jobs. So I took that. It was probably about 20 to 30 grand and a good part of my paychecks because I built this on the side. I was still working at the health and safety training company here in London while building Visitor Queue. So I was able to take X amount of my paychecks every month as well and put those into Visitor Queue. I think it ended up being about 20, 30 grand over the course of a year, eight months to a year that I put in personally, and then Taraz's time as well. Yes.
So this is all happening in 2017.
2017 is when we started building it. We got a private beta out in about October of 2017. So really our MVP, our initial product, we were able to launch then. And that led to some good feedback, some good changes we had to make. And we were able to get that done and then launch into, that was about 10 to 15 people on the private beta. Then we launched into a public beta in December of 2017. And that got a few thousand users. And we got even more feedback. They broke the system. We fixed it. They broke it. We fixed it. And that kind of product development cycle that is so important at that early stage. And then after we had been tested by a number of users and we were confident in the feedback and our offering, we launched three more features of our product that we knew we needed in order to move into a paid product in April of 2018. So since April of 2018, we've had our full paid product and been available with our full product out there.
From 15 closed beta users, how did you manage to go to a couple of thousand beta users?
Yeah, the closed beta, about 10 to 15. I just reached out to some people I knew in B2B right. companies. And then with the public beta, a lot of it was product hunt and mm-hmm. cold email campaigns to B2B companies. Product hunt drove a few hundred, maybe 500 within the first few weeks of being launched on there. And then over the next 2 to 3 months before we went into our paid product, it was cold email campaigns. And then we tested a lot of stuff too, like AdWords. We tested LinkedIn. We tested Facebook. We tested everything. AdWords proved to work and still does work today to drive signups for us. But a lot of it was product hunt. And then it was kind of piecemeal everything else in there.
Right. As you were doing this experiment and you were building the MVP and then you were sort of testing out the marketing channels, what was the competitive landscape that you were looking at?
So we had one competitor that had just launched and then two other pretty established companies. LeadFeeder was just kind of getting off the ground mm-hmm. and taking off very rapidly. And that gave us some proof of concept as well. Fast-growing competitors are not always a bad thing, right? They yeah. can be a good thing. They can be your proof of sure. concept. And especially if you can prove the market's large enough or you can differentiate enough to exist in it. The other large one had been out for probably 5 or 10 years and is fairly well established still. So those are the main players, those two. And then today there might be one or two more currently in the competitive landscape, But again, very large market, and each of us kind of narrow down into our own niche and kind of what we do. And we're building out further in order to continue to differentiate in the future. And we're very excited for what that will look like in the next year or two as well.
So as you started this journey of going pay, what was your idea of pricing?
That was a while ago. So I think this is my first venture too. I was pretty young at that point. So I think we just said, let's undercut pretty much everybody. And that's, I think, the initial strategy we went for. Because we were completely bootstrapped, our product wasn't the best coming out of and going into to a paid product. It wasn't the best. So we had to kind of price accordingly, and we needed some cash flow coming in. Otherwise we wouldn't have made it much longer. But yeah, I think we shot for being kind of at the low end of the market, and we've moved up since then. We're more around the mid tier. But at that point we were comfortable with kind of pricing on the lower end in comparison to
our
competitors.
So what was your strategy going in to acquire paid customers? Because how many of these public beta, the guys were using it free, how many of them converted into a paid customer?
Good question. And I think I used to know that number. It was probably 10 to 30, very low conversion rate. Because if you open it up on Product Hunt, you open it up to a bunch of beta testers, right? Anybody and their dog can sign up. Any free user can sign up. So we had a lot of people in there that probably aren't even our target customer or target tester. So probably 10 to 30. And it slowly started to build up from there using AdWords and those cold email campaigns. That's really where we started to narrow in on, this is our target market, this is who we're going after, and this is where the good paid conversions and paid customers are going to come from. And still to this day, I'm trying to think of the actual number of conversions we get from AdWords. Don't have it off the top of my head, but probably 25 to 30% of our conversions come from AdWords. A good chunk come from our content creation. And that's starting to really take off, where we're getting 15,000 blog views a month. But if you look back 2 to 3 months, that number was half of that or even smaller. So a good chunk from content as well. A lot from remarketing, some direct traffic, and then some just our good organic traffic, because we've been able to build up a good portion of our SEO over the last few years.
Sure. So let's unpack these separately. So let's take AdWords. And obviously AdWords strategy is linked to your niche that you defined for yourself, right?
Yeah.
Which is sort of your ideal customer profile. So how did you go about doing this? Because everybody who is running a SaaS or a B2B company would potentially have a website, which means they'll potentially have visitors, which means they're missing out. So there, everybody is practically your target, right? So how did you sort of narrow down on saying, okay, this is the market we are going after?
So for AdWords specifically, we really go after, kind of two questions there I'll try to unpack. So the first one, like our target market, we go after small to medium business, B2B companies. It has to be B2B. That's how our software works. And and we usually target the English speaking countries, because that's what our software is programmed in. It fits with, it's in English. So that's usually what works. So that's really our target market. As you can imagine, that's very, very large. So with AdWords, what we target are people looking for lead generation services, people that actually, which they might not know about our niche. They might be looking for kind of a Zoom info or an uplead or something along those lines, but they're looking for leads. They know they need leads, right? We target people that are interested in website analytics. So again, they might not know about our service or our niche, but they are interested in website analytics. And then we target a lot of people that are looking for kind of our specific niche, which is website visitor tracking, IP address reversal, or IP to company name, those kind of queries. And then the last part is really kind of the competitive AdWords as well, where we bid on kind of the main competitors' keywords and try to attract people that are on a free trial with them, or might be a customer with them to switch to us. Because as we know, there's when you make a SaaS decision or you're looking at buying software, you usually shop around, right? You look at all your different options. You do three free trials, which might not, which the software might not love, but options are great for consumers. That's for sure.
Where have you arrived at in terms of your cost of acquisition of a customer via AdWords?
Just via AdWords?
Yeah.
So it's about $500 to $750, depending on the month. So we've been averaging about that over the last few months. And AdWords is one of those things where you're constantly changing for the better or for the good. That's my background is within AdWords, and it's kind of my fail safe. If anything was to ever go wrong, I know AdWords is usually a good backup for me and something I can rely on. So it's always changing, right? You make one tweak and Google doesn't like it and your cost of acquisition goes up, or you make one tweak and it's a good one that they like and you can drive it down. But generally, we're between $500 and $750 per month on AdWords.
So now it is about 18 months payback for you for one customer acquisition. Is that around that number?
From AdWords specifically?
Yeah.
It's probably closer to 10 months. Probably closer to 10 months payback.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your average life of customer now that you can see?
So lifetime value, I have that number up. I don't have the months in front of me, but I guess I could calculate it based on that. But we see around $2,250 is the lifetime value of the customer.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So let's move to this content piece, which you are excited about, and you obviously have made a lot of progress over the last couple of months. So what is it that you are doing that your larger competitors are not doing, which is now sort of giving you the uptake that you are seeing via the content marketing piece?
I don't know what they're doing wrong, but I know what we're doing right.
Okay.
So what we do is we push as much content out as possible. And I think that's really the one thing that we do right. Is we publish as much. We push about 8 to 10 blog articles a month. We have our What the Growth videos that are starting to pick up traction as well. And I think the key to it that we do well is our research that goes into the articles. We push out a lot of content, but we don't push out trash or stuff that we don't expect to rank. We push out stuff that we strategically think, based on our research, will rank well. And there's great tools out there for anybody listening. AdWords has a free one where you can see keywords, what the monthly searches are for it, or Google has their trends as well, Google Trends, that you can see this as well. The key to it is putting good research into it, understanding who's ranking for those words right now, currently, the keywords you're going after, and seeing if you can make a foothold in there, and then giving it some time and properly SEOing it. Those are the big ones. You're not going to we have articles that we pushed out a year ago that are now just starting to rank really well, right? It's very competitive at times, especially for some of the keywords that are going to be high value. But you have to give it time and you have to put the proper work into it and push out as much as possible. It's almost like, it's similar to kind of our regular day-to-day as entrepreneurs, right? We take 100 shots, one of them actually might go in. Same with content. You got to take 100 shots to get the one really good one that drives a ton of good traffic.
So how big is this team that is driving your content initiative right now?
Just myself and our marketing manager. Our marketing manager pushes out 2 to 3 blog posts a week. And then we have our What the Growth that comes from it as well. We previously used another writer, but we just kind of moved everything internally and moved around some priorities to fit that.
And have you been able to evaluate what is the cost of acquisition through this channel?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I haven't looked at that in a bit.
But that's driving about 30% of your customer new signups, is it?
Correct, yes.
Okay. So apart from the content marketing piece and AdWords, what else are you doing?
Remarketing. We just got back into remarketing. So we use Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, the Google Display Network, and YouTube to all remarket to people that have and two separate buckets, really high value ones that have been on our website but they didn't convert, into a free trial, and then another bucket of just blog visitors and serving them up different content, right? Someone that's high value would probably want to see a case study or something along those lines, versus someone that is in that has just viewed a blog from you before. They probably don't understand what your service does, or might limit might have a limit on what they know. So you probably want to serve them up something and show them something that is more kind of an introduction to your brand that they might not have got when they were first on your blog, when they skimmed through your the article you had and then got out of there because they got the content you needed, right? So a lot of it outside of Google and content, Google AdWords and content is our remarketing campaigns. We do a fair bit of Quora posting as well. Mm-hmm. To get some content and get some organic from there. But yeah, I'd say those are the main initiatives.
It's time for a short break. I was discussing with Nick how their customers are using the Visitor Queue tool and then asked how Visitor Queue is using their own tool. He had an interesting answer, which will help understand what type of companies can use this class of applications profitably. Nick was super transparent. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for SaaS Stories and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Right before the break, I asked Nick how Visitor Queue itself is using their own tool. Listen in. How is Visitor Queue working here for you?
So we use Visitor Queue as well. But the thing is, we have to be careful because our ARPU is so low that that's the design, right? We're going for mass amounts of customers and a lower ARPU. To really employ a sales team and to have a sales team reach out to individuals and cold call and so on, you need an ARPU of $250 plus per month. Because we're closer to $80 in ARPU, we can't really employ a sales team and pay them commission because the deals just aren't large enough for what they're chasing, right? So we use Visitor Queue to monitor who's on the website to follow up with warm leads, but not cold leads. So if we see that someone that we've previously demoed before, maybe 2 or 3 months ago that never converted, is back onto the website looking around again, we'll follow up with them via our channels. And that's really, we use it from a more of a warm lead use case than a cold lead, which is on the other side of what some of our clients do that have that higher contract value.
Great. So this is a good time to actually get into the tool.
Yeah.
A lot of people, myself included, is not absolutely clear how to really leverage the data that the system or your tool is throwing up. I'll just give an example. I don't know whether I mentioned to you, I'm a user of your product. So I have been one of those early ones. I think we have been there since 2018, some point.
Yeah.
We have been very early. We see a lot of names of companies, right? We see companies from all over North America coming into our site every day. Then do what?
So there's a few ways that companies action on the data. And there's some that kind of sit in your bucket or there is a bucket that's just like, I want to know the companies visiting my website. I might not take action every day or might not take action at all, really. They like to see who's on their website. The same reason you look at Google Analytics, right? You might not have too much action there. You might see your visitors are 1,000 one day and 1,200 the next, and you're like, okay, that's great. I'd like to see that. And it adds value with them because they're able to understand who's on their website. They get some reassurance that their website's working, right? People are going there and so on. And then the other bucket is on the marketing side, where if you're like, I pushed out this blog content, I want to ensure that we're driving companies to it, that it's companies that are going here, or how is AdWords doing? Is it driving actual companies to our website? So it's more on the marketing analytics side. And then the third bucket, which is probably our biggest use case, is with sales teams. And that's really the key to visitor queue. If you want to get an actual dollar value return out of it, a hard dollar in, a hard dollar out, is using it from a sales team perspective, where some teams have it set up, where they have their whole sales team built out. They have a cold outreach, a business development side of it, and some don't. So that really fits in kind of two ways into sales teams. If you don't have a cold outreach department of business development side, you'll set up visitor queue. You'll have your reps in there where they'll see the companies visiting the website, and they'll be able to see, oh, this company that I prospected yesterday actually came to the website. Now I'm going to follow up with them. So it acts as a reminder to follow up with them. Or this deal I've been working on for 3 months, I just see that they're on the website. I get my email notification. I see that, or I flag them so that I'm alerted if they're on the website. Okay, great. I should probably make contact with them. So it adds almost as a reminder to follow up with those warm leads. And then on the cold lead side, if you have a cold outreach process or business development process, looking at which companies are visiting the website, understanding what they did on the website, qualifying them based on, hey, did they visit a use case page? Did they visit a case study page? And the likes, to ensure that they're a qualified company visiting the website. And then reaching out to somebody in your target market, someone in your target persona at those companies. So whether you're sending that person, so we talk to marketing managers, that's our number one persona. So we would see that XYZ company visited the website. We'd go to LinkedIn, find their marketing manager, and send them a note on LinkedIn saying, hey, did you have a need for our service? Or we kind of get cheeky with it where we'll say, hey, we saw you're on our website. Obviously, our software works. Did you have a need for our service? And we closed business like that as well. And a lot of our clients see success in that cold outreach process. But there's a number of different use cases with the data.
Sure. Just to dig a little further, when you are doing this cold outreach based on visits from a certain company,
yeah,
there is no way for you to actually know who has come there, right? You just know that somebody from that company came because you reverse sort of matched the IP to that company.
Correct? Yeah. So I always joke that I would have made a lot of money if I could identify anonymous visitors, but I also would have went to prison because it is illegal across many privacy regulations to identify unique end individuals. So we tell you the company, and then depending on your business, our business specifically, marketing managers are the head of marketing somewhere. The head of marketing is our top persona. So we know that it's likely them visiting our website because that's our target persona. The head of HR isn't going to be on our website, right? So we know to reach out to them because they're either the one that was on our website or they're part of the purchasing decision.
Right.
So that's usually kind of the compass that we provide. We don't tell you exactly to reach out to this person because we can't.
Sure.
We point you like a compass would in the right direction.
Where are you in your MRR today?
We're approaching about $500,000. In MRR. Sorry, that's ARR.
Okay.
We're approaching about $500,000 in ARR.
Okay. And that will be how many users now?
That's about 500 users.
And these are all paid users who are, you're only counting the paid users. Obviously.
Only paid users. Users, we call them accounts because an account can have 40 users and still be one. So that's
right.
One. So there's 500 of that. We have a few thousand accounts, but we have a free light plan that a lot of them stay on afterwards. Yeah.
So where do you go from here? Because I do know that the tool needs some work in the throwing up of some company data bit. What is your roadmap going from here?
So you're right. Data is always, it's not something that you solve and it's done, right?
Yeah.
Data is always evolving. There's always privacy changes. There's There's always advancements. So it's never something that's done. So it's something we're always working on. So that is a key in the roadmap is increasing the data that we're providing to our clients in two ways, really, ensuring that they have the most contact information possible. The GDPR and CCPA really make that tough, but it's something that we're working towards. And then the second part of it is ensuring that we're identifying as many companies as possible and exploring new ways to track IP addresses on a website and to reverse it into a company that's visiting visiting a website. That's really the two parts of the data, and that's ongoing. Like I said, that's forever ongoing. We'll never be completely done with advancing our data and our information. And I don't think any data company out there would ever say that they've solved it and they're good to go for the next 5 years, right? It's something that you always change. And then on the more product side, outside of the data, we're really working on integrations right now. So we're just wrapping up a HubSpot native integration. We're integrated with Zapier, and Zapier is great. I love Zapier. They do a lot of great things. But the native integration makes it easier at times, and you get put in their marketplace. So there's a potential for a marketing benefit as well. So on that front, we're working on the integrations. Next, we're moving on to Sugar CRM, and we're almost done a Salesforce native integration as well. So on the integration side, that's one piece of it. And then we're looking at new services that are out there to help us kind of differentiate more and look at new markets that we can build into. And we actually just got approved for a grant from the Canadian government about a service that we pushed to them because the Canadian government's great in that regard where and the key is you have to have money first and then they'll actually listen to you. Once you have some revenue rolling in and so on, they'll say, okay, you have some traction. Let's start a project, as they call it. And they'll fund part of the R&D side of it. So we're looking at website personalization based on the information that we have. And that's the project that the government just approved us on this last Friday. So we'll be starting to work on that as well, where companies will be able to personalize their website based on the information that we provide. So if, as an example, if you weren't industry centric, right? You're industry agnostic and you served every possible industry out there, or maybe a number of different industries. You could customize your website based on the information we have based on the industry to say, hey, if someone visits from the retail sector, as an example, show them logos of customers that we work for that are in that we work with that are in the retail sector, or case studies that are specific to the retail sector. Change the content that's specific to the retail sector, and so on. So that's something that we will be working on in the next few months that we hope to launch this year. But a part of our more immediate roadmap as well.
So this is part of your long-term vision. I mean, there are quite a few companies which are doing this already, right?
Yeah.
The website personalization. Quite a few.
But there's a good one, Google Optimize. I think it's Google Optimize. It's free. The thing that we bring in is personalization for B2B companies. None of them can, as it sits right now, personalize a website based on that information that we have about how many employees are at that company, how many, what's the industry, what's the company name, where are their headquarters, and so on. So we have some good unique fields that really benefit a subsection and a more niche side of website personalization. Where Google Optimize, I think it's VWO. There's a few good personalization out there. But they don't really tailor to B2B, and they don't have that unique ability that we have where we can say this visitor is from this industry, so serve up this, or they have this amount of employees, so serve up this content.
Fair enough. So from where you stand, are you planning to raise funds? Have you raised funds yet?
We have a unique funding background, and I had to write it out before this because there's quite a bit. And I'll just run through that, and then I'll get to raising funds. So it really started with $30,000 of kind of my own seed money put into it. We brought in a small family and friend investor for another 20,000 that was paid out over the course of a year and a bit as well. We then got a grant from the Canadian government for 30,000 that was paid out. They like to do tranches of it. So that was paid out throughout the course of a year as well. We then got a small business loan for 45,000. I'm trying to do this in order as well.
Sure.
Another small business loan for 75,000. Another one for 50,000 over the course of the last 3 years.
Right.
Some of them more immediate. And then we've got some good grants, good grant money rolling in as well. Some hiring grants for a total of about 55,000. I don't know what that one was for. And then we just got accepted for another $50,000 grant. That was another hiring grant for another 20,000. So in total,
about 350?
150 in grants. You're fairly close, about 150 in loan and some equity put in as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then future, we don't have any plans to raise future capital at this point. We like where we are right now. We're growing fairly steadily. We plan to, we're projected to double or triple this year, with this stretch goal being tripled. And I still own a lot of the company. My co-founder still owns their fair share. So, we're happy with where it is right now. And we're looking at, with kind of where we're at now, how we take bigger shots, like the website personalization. And if we get some traction there and we see that additional investment is granted and needed, we will definitely explore it. We're not opposed to taking it, but where we sit now, we're happy with where we are now. We're going to look to take bigger shots. And then if those fan out and they warrant investment, definitely looking into taking in an investment.
So now at around 40,000 MRR, how close are you to profitability?
We would have been profitable if we didn't hire more people over the last 2 months. Yeah. So we're pushing that needle, right? We're constantly pushing that envelope. We're probably burning 5 to 10 right now in each month, depending on the month in cash. Depends if we have some good annual renewals coming in that month and so on. But burning about 5 to 10 and always pushing the envelope, right? When we get to profitability, adding more employees, investing more into marketing and so on. Yeah.
How many of your subscribers are renewing annually and how many are actually recurring monthly payers?
So the breakdown's about 30 to 70, respectfully. So 30% annually, 70% on the monthly basis.
Great. Yeah. And how much of this is actually, if you break it up, how much is going towards your AdWord and similar campaigns? How much is towards people and how much is towards infrastructure? Like, I don't know whether you use AWS or Azure or whatever. How does that break up?
So we're on AWS. I'll answer that part first. So it's about 10 to 12 in AdWords, another 3 to 5 in other marketing, paid marketing efforts, like the remarketing and so on that I mentioned. And then about 15 to 17 in salary, depending on how many pay periods went through that month.
Right.
So you're looking at 30 to 35 in just salary and marketing, and everything else is made up by the smaller expenses. And our infrastructure actually isn't that expensive. Probably another 5 to 7 there as well.
Right. And are you paying yourself? Is your co-founder paying himself?
I'm paying myself the absolute minimum I can pay myself. So minimum wage here in Ontario or Canada is it's actually quite high. It's $14 US or Canadian. So that's what I pay myself on an annual basis. And then my co-founder is more on the fractional side.
Right.
So he doesn't draw salary, no.
Okay. So where do you go from here in terms of, so you told me that your product roadmap is website personalization bit and your revenue target is tripling it as a stretch, at least doubling it end of this year. How much profit will it leave you with at that point in time?
Again, I like to push the needle, so probably none. Okay. I'll eventually hire and invest more into marketing. I don't plan on being profitable by the end of the year or anytime soon. As long as we keep up that growth trajectory and there's stuff that we can invest in it to grow, then I'll probably leave it where we're close to breaking even or breaking even at all times and continuing to push the envelope. I don't have a desire to be profitable right now. I want to build something that's big, that's meaningful, and something I can look back and be proud of. So that's the plan as of right now.
Great. So what's your exit strategy?
My exit strategy. That's a good question. You should always come in with the exit in mind, right? So previously, I probably would have been that we'll eventually sell. We'll get to a point where Lead Feeder or someone else wants to buy us up to grab our user base. So I definitely still see that as a growth as an exit strategy. But there's also the possibility, like a lot of companies do, where they'll cash out, right? They'll turn it into a cash cow. They'll keep it running and they'll get their profits out that way, and then eventually sell to who they need to. But at this point, those are the two that I could see as possibilities.
SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 990-216-3132. That is 990-216-3132.
Okay, that's great. Nick, thank you very much. I really enjoyed chatting with you. If someone wants to get in touch with you and wants to learn more about VisitorQ, what should they do?
Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'll definitely respond there, or send me an email, nick@visitorq.com. Very straightforward. Or if you want to learn more about VisitorQ, visitorq.com. Sign up for a free trial and you'll be off to the races.
Wonderful. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today and listening to this episode of SaaS Stories. This is where I speak with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead and built world-class SaaS products. We hope this conversation helped you with the insights that you can go and apply right now to your own SaaS journey. We hope to have you here with us again in the next episode of SaaS Stories. SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform, and is a BizCast original production.